wouldn't it economically be crazy to finish this pipeline, start pumping this oil in, because it is going to run out, we'll be hooked on it, and then the rationale will be, well, you have to pay even more for oil because we built it.
That's exactly right. What we are looking at is a scenario where instead of treating the problem, instead of treating our actual and very real addiction problem that we have to oil, we are just simply looking for a new dealer. We do have other alternatives. Certainly electric vehicles are growing in market distribution, and slowly but surely we are beginning to see signs that electric vehicles' time may be on the rise. The real area, and the area that can and I hope will impact each and every one of us in the coming months and years, is President Obama has made a few different announcements in terms of vehicle efficiency standards. These are all vehicles. This doesn't require some very fancy purchase of a Tesla or some new innovative electric vehicle. This is the regular gasoline-powered vehicles. These are not laws passed by Congress. These are agreements that the Environmental Protection Agency, the Obama administration, and the car manufacturers themselves have come to the table and said, help us to stay competitive. And we are seeing some great breakthroughs getting more energy value out of the energy that we're already using. And that's where we should be concentrating, not opening up our borders to more dirty oil. A bigger concern, and a concern that is probably a little harder to characterize and certainly harder for most of us to wrap our heads around, is the real threats that will come from this increased global warming pollution. And that is, I think, sort of the critical take-home message here, is you can hurt for a while you're paying extra at the pump, but all of us are going to hurt, if not our lifetime and our children's lifetime, if we are continuing to increase our carbon pollution rather than decrease it. We are supposed to be on the downward slope here. We are supposed to be reducing emissions. We are supposed to be promoting efficiency and cleaner energy sources. And this is a 180-degree U-turn if we go this direction. And there are very real and valid concerns that are going to impact our southeastern United States here in terms of variable weather patterns. We're going to have hotter, we're going to have colder, we're going to have drier, wetter, we're going to have sea level rise. I mean, the list goes on and on.
My understanding is it really comes down to the White House and whether or not President Obama signs the order to go forward with the project, and it's not really in the hands of Congress. Now, granted, if he's got plenty of representatives backing him up, it's going to be easier.
True. And I think the reason to reach out to Congress is the President of the United States is somebody who is listening at many levels. He may still take his own counsel on this. This is a decision that is expected to be made in this calendar year. We really probably have very few months left. This is not something that I suspect will linger for years to come. The appeal process may, but let's not win this on appeals. I think it's very important that we send a decisive message soon.
There has been such a fundamental but slow shift toward the energy efficiency, a little bit more for mass transit and electric vehicles, biofuels, and all that we mentioned. So that it's really not that we need this oil. It's just that some people want to keep using the oil.
Inertia is a hard thing to overcome, and what we have is a society that for over 100 years has been based around gasoline-powered engines. That's where the power brokers in Congress are. That's where certainly the power brokers on Wall Street are. It is going to be a fundamental paradigm shift to help people to recognize that there are ways to power our transportation future that aren't exclusively dependent on petroleum-based oil. And even while we are still using petroleum-based oil, which of course will happen for some time to come, we could certainly be more efficient with that which we are using. That's where we need to be putting our efforts for sure, rather than seeking more venues for our dirty oil addiction. We should be fast marching towards the new direction.
Does the current climate in Washington for fiscal restraint and cutting spending and all of that that's going on, all these theatrics and hostage taking and all these other different issues that have been going on with the budgets and so forth, is there a bright side to this? Is this sinking in that maybe some of these subsidies for dirty oil, dirty energy, and counterproductive environmental policies, is there any chance for your sense of this that maybe finally there's a chance to cut back on these subsidies and level the playing field economically?
if there's ever been a time in the United States Congress where we may have politics making interesting bedfellows, and where we may have people who, for instance, would oppose coal or nuclear subsidies based on human health or environmental health concerns, and others opposing subsidies strictly for fiscal concerns, I would say we are in that era right now. But unfortunately, some of the early votes that have been cast over the last few months have not rolled back some of these massive, massive subsidies. And even during the very intense and sometimes very acrimonious debates around raising the debt ceiling, where one of the opportunities for new funds would have been to allow some of these subsidies to lapse and to allow some of these loopholes to close, it was not done. I don't hold out a lot of hope that we are going to see some of these policy changes made, despite the fact that a very good case could be made for people who are fiscally concerned about the levels of out-of-control government spending, certainly giving literally billions of dollars a year to companies that are making millions and millions in profit. It seems quite ludicrous that we continue down that path.
There are a tremendous number of potential savings there. I had a very interesting conversation off the microphone with a Tea Party person, and I asked them, well, what about the $600 billion earmarked in the next 10 years for nuclear power? And there was nothing but a blank silence back, and I could tell it sank in. It was like, so these hard questions I think we all need to ask, can we afford these things?
Interesting that you should mention the nuclear subsidies. The Southern Alliance for Clean Energy last week released a report called TVA's Bad Nuclear Bet, and it is specifically looking at a nuclear power plant in Alabama. It's the Belafonte plant, and that plant was begun some decades ago. Billions of dollars were put into that plant.
35 years ago, I believe.
That's true. It was almost 40 years ago that construction began. It was mothballed at a certain point. After billions, and that is billions with a B, of taxpayer dollars were put into the construction of this plant, now there is talk of taking it out of mothballs, putting more billions in to try and get it up and working. We just issued a report citing all of the concerns and the problems that are out there. This is one single plant, and you're talking billions and billions of dollars. And because the Tennessee Valley Authority is a wholly owned public subsidiary of the United States government, that's your tax dollars and my tax dollars at work. That right there is just one example of the issues we have with billions of dollars of taxpayer subsidies going not just to nuclear, but we have it going to coal. We have it going, and to be fair, there are subsidies that go to solar and wind as well. All energy sectors receive subsidies, but the amounts are staggering in the differences. You know, in some cases you're getting a couple hundred million over a few years, and in other cases you're getting tens of billions in an annual cycle. So there is not a level playing field. There never has been a level playing field, and the tar sands look to be a Johnny-come-lately that is really going to jump in the queue here and start feeding heavily from the trough of public subsidies as they try to make this really dirty oil seem appealing to all of us.
And I don't know the exact number. I suspect no one does. But I've seen numbers that suggest that for every dollar for solar, dirty energy gets $10,000. And it's this kind of disparity, whatever it actually is, that really takes the wind out of the sails when people say, well, wind power won't survive without subsidies. Well, take away all the subsidies and clean energy is cheaper.
Yes, clean energy is cheaper. And the one thing I would point to in this case is look at where Wall Street is investing. Now, we're having some issues because when we don't have a lot of market certainty, when we're only having legislation that is passing in 1 and 2 year cycles, it is difficult for investors to want to invest in large scale wind and solar projects. But Wall Street is backing clean energy. Wall Street is fundamentally aligning itself with wind and with solar. Wall Street doesn't back a nuclear plant. There have been several that have been pulled back and put on the shelf and maybe entering mothball stage from the planning stage because there simply are not the funds. And without taxpayer-backed nuclear loan guarantees, these plants aren't moving forward. It is a fair question to ask, what if we removed absolutely all subsidies? Then how cheap, quote-unquote, would coal be? Then how cheap would nuclear energy be? Because these are actually quite expensive forms, and that's just in the production. That does not include the health and environmental impacts that we are well aware are out there it is a myriad of issues that we're tracking, and they all intersect in interesting ways. After the devastating earthquake and tsunami that occurred in Japan back in March, interestingly, on the western side of the North Island there were wind farms that were still spinning. They were the unique source of power to some of these prefects in Japan. And as we well know, the nuclear power situation is still not under control, and we are months and months later. It is an interesting nexus of how all of these are coming together. And unfortunately, now we have tar sands and oil shale trying to break into this pack as well.
And at the same time, a spill in the North Sea in the general vicinity of where a new wind farm is going in. It just seems incredulous that we're still doing these things.
It does seem incredulous, but you know that's a really important point that you just pointed out, Ned. Yes, there is absolutely offshore oil drilling happening in the North Sea off the coasts of Great Britain, and they are experiencing a spill right now, and it remains to be seen exactly what the devastation. But Great Britain also has a significant amount of offshore wind farms, and right now they are in the construction phase of what will become the world's largest offshore wind farm off the coast of Great Britain in the North Sea. And they've got their problems, but they're also actively marching towards the solutions. Whereas here in the United States, in our backyard, we have a devastating oil spill that destroys the Gulf of Mexico. And now we're turning briskly and walking towards Canada as our salvation, which may provide just as many environmental and human health impacts as well. We don't seem to be learning our lessons. We're not looking towards our coasts in terms of our own offshore wind farms. It's a very slow process right now.
Jen, any last thoughts as we come down to the last few moments of our opportunity to discuss the pipeline, the tar sands, and oil policy?
Yes, one thing I really want to leave listeners with is with the three main issues that you hear discussed in Washington, D.C. and in state houses all over the country are jobs, jobs, and jobs. So if we are truly concerned about jobs, and if we want to be creating jobs in every community and not just some select jobs up in Canada or a few select jobs at refineries, let's get really serious about clean and renewable and efficient jobs at home. Every community can be putting people to work, making homes more efficient. Every community can be installing solar panels. Every community can be looking for ways to get more out of the energy we're currently using and finding bigger and better ways to build clean energy. So keep that in mind, to contact your elected officials with that thought and to really push for this, because windows are beginning to close here. If we commit ourselves to some of these very damaging and very polluting sources of energy, it's going to be much, much harder. We're in a hole and we continue to dig, and we really need to stop digging. My organization, the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, has a lot of resources on our website. Our website is cleanenergy.org. That's nice and easy to remember.
That's right to the point.
Right to the point. We have resources, fact sheets. So I would encourage people to educate themselves first and foremost.
Jennifer Renix, Federal Policy Coordinator for the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. Thank you very much for taking the time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our Southern Community is an independent media program. This program and other archived interviews are available at oursoutherncommunity.org for free downloads. Your programming suggestions and comments are always warmly welcomed at info@oursoutherncommunity.org. I'm your host, Ned Ryan Doyle. Thanks for listening.